To the True Blue LA podcast. The Dodgers are 97-54 after going 4-2 last week. They have a 20.5 game lead in the NL West, but it doesn't matter because they clinched the division really, really early. A little later than we thought, though, Eric.
There are fewer than 20.5 games left, so they're in pretty good shape division-wise, I would say.
that's the expert analysis you come to this podcast for.
That's right.
Jacob Birch. You're Eric Steven.
Hello.
Where were you when the Dodgers clinched the division?
I was sitting in the exact seat I'm sitting in now, in my apartment in West Covina, watching the game that was in Baltimore. It was the series opener. I believe that was also Bark at the Park night. And my brother, who lives in Baltimore, was visiting last week. He went to one of the Giants games at Dodger Stadium, and he ended up going to Wednesday's game, and he was adamant the week before saying he didn't want to go to the stadium when there's going to be a bunch of dogs walking around. I don't know if he thought they were going to poop on him or what, but like I said, they generally keep him in a few different areas, so it's not like you're going to be like having dogs climbing all over you during the game. But he's like, nah, I don't want to go to that game. So he missed the clincher twice, so that's too bad.
I'm not exactly sure where I was, because I was probably sleeping on one of either the guest bed, because I was still getting over that really nasty cold. But I'm back now. We're going to talk about the Dodgers. We've got a Cody Bellinger update. We're going to kind of look ahead to see what the last remaining bit of regular season looks like all after this. Okay, before we get too deep in it, we got to start with the Cody Bellinger pace update.
The pace has gone way down since last week, because Cody Bellinger, from a power standpoint, hasn't really done anything. He homered on Labor Day. And the Dodgers, he's played in all of them, 11 games and 46 plate appearances without a home run, without an extra base hit during that time. So he's still at 44 home runs, 108 RBIs now. He's on pace for 47 home runs and 116. So the top dog in like Dodger home run history, Sean Green with 49, Adrian Beltre has 48. So as it stands now, Bellinger's already third. Nobody in between those, but he has to pick it up a little bit, or else he won't catch either of those two guys.
You concerned at all, or is this just sort of a normal slump thing?
I mean, like, everyone is always quick to be like, oh, that's World Series Bellinger, you know, like, or that, you know, that was, he's swinging and missing, and he is, like, he always has that, like, sort of half swing on an outside pitch that looks really bad when he's fooled or something. The strikeouts are up, but not like alarmingly so, I don't think. But I will say this, we talked about earlier in the season when he was over 400 that he's clearly not hitting 400. But like, even if he has like his like 2-year average the rest of the way, he's still going to end up with a nice season. He's kind of ended up that way, like since like the middle of May or whenever he was last over 400. But I will say this, like, right now he's hitting 304, 407, 625. The number of qualified seasons in Dodger history when a player has slugged 600 is like very minuscule. So like just him starting his slugging percentage with a 6 is going to be an accomplishment. But it's funny because his batting average right now, 304, and his slugging percentage, 625, is the lowest it's been all season after a game. So we are watching Cody Bellinger at his worst this year right now. Like this is as bad as he's been, and he still has an OPS over 1,000. So worried, it's a slump, but like not, probably not. Like he still has time to turn around, I think.
And if he wants to turn it around in the playoffs, that's just fine.
Yeah,
take 2 weeks off. It's fine.
Maybe he's getting it out of the way now, and then like he's gonna really go off in October. Who knows?
That's how slumps work, Eric. I looked at it.
It's true.
So both series kind of resembled the same way: a game that was not close in the Dodgers' favor, a loss, and then a kind of a game closer than you would like. I texted you after the Mets series done. It felt like a ho-hum, kind of weird 4-2 week.
Yeah, it was weird. Or one thing it was weird, too, is like, okay, so they're all on the East Coast, but every single game last week started at 4 o'clock Pacific time. So it was like...
Great for me, by the way.
Right.
I've got to go to bed at a normal hour.
When I had a day job and, like, you know, worked until 5 or 6 or whatever at the office, I hated East Coast games. Now that I'm, like, my job is to, like, cover baseball and I'm home or something, I love them to death. And, like, when the game is over, it's, like, still probably light out here, you know, and it's pretty great. So, yeah, I'm a fan. 4 o'clock games, 4 of them, please.
So, I mean, the Dodgers clinched the division. This was, not only has it been a foregone conclusion for a while, it's also kind of all we've been focused on. I've started every podcast for the last 2 months with they're the division lead, and we would usually talk about the magic number. Still 2 weeks to play, still a lot to play for, especially since the Dodgers have been kind of middling over the last month, whereas the Yankees and Astros have kind of continued their hot pace. Still not far behind those two teams. Where do the Dodgers stand in terms of both against the Braves, looking for National League dominance in terms of home field, and then should they play the Astros and the Yankees in the World Series home field there?
Yeah, so as it stands right now, like, the one thing we know is at a minimum, the Dodgers are going to be the home team for their National League Division Series. They have a 4-game lead on the Braves for the top spot in the National League. So, like, that would give them home field throughout the NL playoffs. The magic number for that is 7 right now. The Dodgers own the tiebreaker with the Braves, so they only have to tie them. So, like, to look at that another way, the Dodgers, there's 22 outcomes left. The Dodgers have 11 games. The Braves have 11 games. The Dodgers only need 7 of those 22 to go their way. Very excellent position. Whereas the Braves would need 16 of 22 things to go their way to get home field, to get the number one seed. So that would just essentially mean if the Dodgers were to fall to the number two seed, they would face the NL Central winner, which right now is the Cardinals, but it's close. It's getting closer, like, with the Cubs and the Brewers still, so that's, like, undecided. But, like, that's where it would sort of – but it looks like the Dodgers are going to be the one seed and play the wild card team. Right now, Nationals have a lead there. Cubs are in second wild card position, but they're, again, battling with the Cardinals for the division. And the Brewers are only, like, a game behind. Though the Brewers, like, lost Christian Yelich to a broken kneecap. So, like, that's tough. You know, really awful news for them, but – they're, like, still playing pretty well, so, like, they're not completely out of it just yet. As far as the best record overall, so the Dodgers are a game behind both the Yankees and the Astros. The Yankees and Astros are both 98-53, and the Dodgers are 97-54. Both of them have the tiebreaker over LA. The New York is simple. They beat them in the series at Dodger Stadium 2-1. So if they were to finish tied and meet in the World Series, the Yankees would have home field. The Astros, it's weirder because, so if you don't play head-to-head, the MLB's, like, default second tiebreaker is division record, even though they're in different leagues, so, like, it's not really comparable. So, like, right now, the Astros are 47-18 against the AL West. All 11 of their remaining games are against division. Dodgers are 43-24. They have 9 games left. They also play the Rays twice this week, so... the Astros are probably going to finish there with a better divisional record, but, like, if that somehow was also tied, the next tiebreaker is intra-league records, so, like, league record against your own league, and the Dodgers right now are a game up on the Astros in that regard. They are 88-45 against the NL, and Houston's 87-44 against the AL, so it looks like essentially Dodgers will not have the tiebreaker with the Astros probably. So the Dodgers' magic number for, like, best record overall over both of those teams is 13. Looking at the other way is 13 out of 22 outcomes they need to have happen their way. It's unlikely, or, you know, less likely than not. Whereas the Yankees or the Astros' magic number over the Dodgers is 10. So, like, you know, if the Dodgers got hot, certainly they could close the gap or, you know, beat them. But right now I'd say the odds are in the Yankees and the Astros' favor.
most important thing that's going to happen between now and the end of the regular season, though, is just getting an idea of who is healthy and what this team is going to look like. You and I are going to record a special episode sometime soon, really getting to that in depth. But we definitely should go over some of the injuries and injury updates that we've gotten over the last week as we look to the playoffs.
Yeah, so the one big one last week that we were looking for was Rich Hill coming back, and he hadn't pitched in 3 months. He had the forearm flexor tendon strain, and he was back. It was going to be an abbreviated start on Wednesday in Baltimore. It was only supposed to go two innings. It ended up going two outs. Rich Hill was like dealing the curveball looked great. He struck out the first two batters, and then I guess he's mentioned afterward it happened like on the last pitch or the second to last pitch to the second batter. He hurt his left knee. And then you could see on the mound, like Rich is like demonstrative anyway on the mound, you know, you could sort of always, you always know what he's feeling out there. Cause he's usually just like either cussing or pontificating or just looking in anguish, but he looked like he was hurting. And it turns out he had a left knee issue. He ended up hitting two guys. One was like on the back foot on an 0-2 pitch, I believe. And like, you know, he walked two guys, so he gave up a run. I guess he ended up giving up two runs. I can't remember exactly what he did, but he only faced six batters and he just got those two outs. So he came out. As it stands now, he's not going to start this week, but like he's having an MRI either today or Tuesday. We'll see. And it's, you know, I would not bet on him like being pitching again this year, but he seemed to not rule it out, and like Dave Roberts is like, we'll wait for the medical information first. But Hill threw I think twice in New York, but because he's a maniac who throws every day, and so he's like sort of preparing like he's still gonna pitch. But at this point it's like we talked about before, like even if he's back, he's like an abbreviated pitcher, so I would say you can't count on him for more than like two, maybe three innings. So like at best, he's just goes into that pile of like multi-inning guys. But yeah, it was a very fleeting moment where he looked really good for two batters. Then, oh no, he looks like he's hurt. Then like, so it was kind of a bummer. We'll see what the injury news is this week, but I'm not holding my breath or anything for him. The other sort of, there's a couple, but the bigger news for me now is like Justin Turner. He sprained his left ankle last weekend. He hasn't played since. It's been seven games. To put that in perspective, like Shane Gillis was hired by Saturday Night Live and then subsequently fired. And Turner still hasn't played in that time. So I would say, I guess the plan now is he was supposed to maybe start on Tuesday against the Rays, but Dave Roberts after Sunday's game was like, maybe not. So like, you always sort of overplay injuries in terms of what the manager says and things like that. So I would say he's probably not going to play. And since it's a two-game series with two off days, you can probably safely say Turner might not play till the weekend. So it's one of those things where it just kind of keeps lingering. They said over the – like last week, like, you know, if these games mattered, like, we might suck it up or whatever. But, like, Dodgers are in position to sort of make sure he's healthy, and I think that's what they're sort of looking at. So – that's a concern for now. He's been swinging the bat so well, especially since the All-Star break. Max Muncy he returned, but with his sort of fractured wrist that they said is still not quite 100%. He said it affected him more throwing than batting, which could be a problem when, you know, he has to make throws in the infield, but we'll see. He was 1-for-12 with 6 strikeouts and 2 walks against the Mets. You know, it's hard to tell anything from 3 games, but you hope that he wasn't like rushed back and then like he's going to be like compromised at the plate, because that'll be a problem. The other like injury of note, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more on our next podcast when we sort of go over the potential like playoff roster, but Alex Verdugo, his oblique is apparently fine, but he has a lower back injury now too that he's still having problems with. Dave Roberts basically said last week that will kind of keep him off the – it's probably going to keep him off the NLDS roster. There's nothing obviously definite there, but he hasn't really played. And so it's like running out of time basically where he might be able to play at some point in October, but you know, it's just like you have to be able to get game ready and like plan for that, and it's, you know, there's no more games to play, so they have to do like simulated games or go to Arizona, do stuff like that and get him ready, and you know, very well could, but it sounds like he's not in that position yet. So what it, for the immediate short term, it meant they brought up Edwin Rios, where Dave Roberts said when they were home, they said, we're not going to call up Edwin Rios or Kyle Garlick. Their seasons are basically over. But then they're like, hey, we that left-handed bat, we thought we were going to get back in Alex Verdugo. Let's have that on the bench now. So Rios got the call. He actually homered in one of the games last week. This, if anything, and again, we'll talk about this on next week's podcast, but you know, it sort of solidifies like Matt Beatty's spot on the postseason roster. I thought he was kind of there already.
Oh man. Yeah, right. I really wish we were recording that episode now.
Right. Yeah,
I've
exactly.
Got thoughts on that.
And so it's like, you know, this, like they need that like left-handed bench bat that Verdugo is going to provide. And Verdugo started a lot too, but like the fact that Verdugo is not going to be there and they need that is, and then another thing is like, you know, you could argue, it also like helps Gavin Lux, which it certainly does.
One thing I was going to bring up before you get too much into Lux, as it relates, is Max Muncy started every game at first, whereas he had been kind of
a lot of second.
Do you think this means, could this mean Max Muncy is purely a pinch hitter / first baseman in the playoffs?
No. Okay. They in fact, they're facing two lefties this week in the Rays, although the first one is Blake Snell, and he's only going to go like two or three innings top, so it's almost an opener-esque, so I don't think they're necessarily going to stack the lineup with righties like they do, but basically Roberts was saying with Muncy back, he's going to play second against lefties, so okay. But we'll see, but I will say this about Lux. Lux has started 11 of 12 games since he got called up. They didn't call him up to sit, right? And they've only faced two lefties in that time, but he started one of those games. Now that was also a game without Muncy. And I forgot someone had like an issue that game. Maybe was it Turner? Maybe Turner was originally in the lineup. I forget. And then like they put out like three different lineups because they scratched like two people or something. And then Lux like stayed in the lineup. So it was sort of a thing. But I think that sort of tells you like that Lux is playing now. And so like we'll get into it on the playoff thing. But there's room for both. So that's kind of it. Like those are sort of the big injuries to sort of watch. Joe Kelly, we talked about him briefly last week because he had the leg thing, but he pitched this week, although he hit a guy over the weekend in New York. It was a very weird inning on Saturday, but yeah, that's kind of it on the injuries.
We have some questions from Craig, and I know you have some sort of rant you want to go into before we even did that. But before we get to that, I think there's just some odds and ends that you wanted to get to.
Yeah, so like last week, you remember most of our podcast was like talking about how like what the real concerns were for the Dodgers. And like a lot of it was like, hey, their like entire one of their biggest strengths this year has been starting pitching, specifically the big three at the top of the rotation. And those three pitchers were like very skittish of late, or up and down, I'll say, at least in the case of Buehler. Ryu was downright bad for four straight starts, and Kershaw had a couple shortened outings. So, like, there was concern there, and not that, like, everything gets solved in a week, but, like, all three were really good this last week. Like, Buehler, like, really shut down the Orioles, and the Orioles are terrible, so, like, take what you can get. But he struck out 11 in seven innings, so, like, and then he it was a planned shortened outing on Sunday. He only pitched five innings, but that was by design because the Dodgers wanted to get like four relievers into that game. So like basically an inning each, which they kind of did. The ninth was a little weird, but and Ryu, they skipped him once, so he had 9 days rest before Saturday, and it was against Jacob DeGrom. Both pitched seven scoreless innings. Both were fantastic. And, like, Ryu, like, needed that, you know, just to sort of get back on track. Because he was gassed. And I think they said he worked on a couple mechanical things, which happens, you know, over the course of the year. But, like, that was a concern, like, that he was just sort of running out of gas. at the end, and just to sort of see that was a good sign. And then the thing is, like, well, he still has to pitch, like, you know, essentially every fifth day in the playoffs. But, like, if you look at it, like, as it stands right now, so they slotted Ryu back into the rotation on the Saturday game of the series against the Mets. So the rotation over the weekend was Kershaw, Ryu, Buehler. And then they have, well, they only have five games this week, and they're starting the weekend again in that order, Kershaw, Ryu, Buehler. And I don't know about you, like, there's certainly time now, there's time between now and the postseason for them to reorder as they see fit. But I don't think that was an accident, and I think that's the order they're going to go in. I'm sure I'll be there this week to sort of ask about that, and I doubt they're going to say anything definitive, but I would bet on that being the rotation order for the postseason. Kershaw game one, Ryu game two, Buehler game three. We'll see how it goes, but that's sort of where they're at right now. But then, so back to the rest thing. So Ryu had 9 days rest before this start. They're all pitching next weekend, so all three of them are getting 6 days rest. And then depending on how they maneuver it, they're either going to get 5 and then 6 days rest, or 6 and then 5 days rest for the last regular season start and then game one or whenever they pitch in the playoffs. So they're going to be pretty well rested. And then if, like, Ryu's going in game two, right, of the NLDS, they're not going to, like, go short rest on anyone like they used to do with Kershaw all the time. So that essentially leaves him out of commission for the rest of the series, unless he does some, like, relief thing in game five, which is unlikely. So, like, if the Dodgers were to advance to the NLCS, Ryu would be rested whether he goes in game one or game two of that series. So, like, he's going to be on extra rest, like, his next, like, at least four starts. So that's a positive, too. So, like, I'm less concerned about Ryu than I was. He's obviously still has to, you know, perform. But, like, yeah, that was a big, big start, especially for Ryu. So that was good to see. The other thing is the one obviously we're all, like, worried about or thinking about is Kenley Jansen. He pitched two perfect innings last week and frankly looked really good. The cutter was really moving. And we've talked about this a lot. Like, he's been all over the place, like, this year, you know. Some days he just doesn't have it, where he's, like, completely missing spots or his cutter's really flat. But then also sometimes he's stubborn, where he doesn't mix in other pitches. So he has to sort of do all this, but also it doesn't really matter if he mixes in other pitches if the cutter is crap, you know? So, like, but the cutter this week looked really good, and it was moving and going roughly where he wanted it to go, which is basically what you want. So obviously it's going to be like, you know, this is what it's going to be like in October. We're all like, oh man, does Kenley have it tonight or does he not? But so that's all you see, like, when he's right, he still looks awesome, right? Like, there's nobody in the bullpen who has that, really. And I would just say, David Vesse, I think, talked to him after Sunday's game. He tweeted this. He said, Kenley Jansen said, whenever I feel it click, I just have to hold on to it. That's what you've been witnessing the last two games. And it's like, that's kind of what we're all, like, feeling watching Kenley Jansen right now. It's like, just hold on for dear life, Kenley. You know, like,
month and a half. It's all we need.
Right. So, and it's not even that. It's like 5 weeks, you know, like, if you think about it. So, like, yeah. Yeah. So those the four most important pitchers the Dodgers have had good weeks. And that's a positive sign, I think, for them.
We've got questions from Craig and a rant about ESPN after this. Is Vox, like, somehow owned by Disney? Is everyone owned by Disney at this point?
No.
Great.
Private, yeah.
This is great. We're not going to get yelled at.
Nope.
All right, go for it. You just sent me a note. You send me notes every week. A lot of times they're really detailed. This one just says ESPN rant.
Okay, so I just want to preface this, and this is not really a rant. I'm not Dennis Miller, but especially the last 20 years, Dennis Miller. Look, announcing on a national level, I will admit, like, that has to be, like, the hardest job of all the announcing jobs in baseball, because you, like, how do you keep track of, like, all 30 teams, right? Especially if you have, like, another announcing job, like, during the season, like, you basically have to do, that's why national guys, like, or national announcers go in early to to do a day or two prep work for their national game. So they actually have like research on their side, or, you know, some general semblance of what's going on, because it's hard to go in blind, right? And look, yeah, there's a lot of time to fill in nine innings, and I get it. And I'm not looking for, like, you know, I'm trying not to nitpick, but my God, man, the ESPN Sunday night broadcast is just almost unlistenable at this point. I will say around the third inning or so, the news of Rick Ocasek dying broke. And so I was listening to the cars for like almost the entire rest of the game, like while watching it on mute. And that was awesome. So the couple things this is the thing, like, if you don't like know a team and you just go in and you like, my biggest thing is like, so, okay, let's start with A-Rod, right? When he was playing, he was like, he like tried too hard to pretend he was human, you know, like, or I don't know. It was weird. He just seemed always fake. And when he, and then he was like a disgraced player at the end of his career. He got suspended for like 211 games for PEDs and sort of went out on a bad note. But then after his playing career died, he started off like calling games. He was doing work with like studio work with Fox Sports, and he was just like, you know, basically just shooting the shit, right? Like just talking baseball, like being real. And it was like refreshing, and you're like, oh, all right, A-Rod's likable. This is weird. And now it seems like on ESPN, he just has like these point, like data points he has to get across. And they're just, he's always talking about, like, you know, it's just the same old cliche that every other announcer has. He talks about bunting. He talks about clutch guys. Like, there's no way A-Rod likes bunting this much. Like, he can't possibly. Like, he's A-Rod, for God's sake. He hit, you know, almost 700 home runs, and he's sitting there talking about how great bunting is. Like, no. But the other thing is, like, so if you're a national announcer, you have, like, these, you know, your sort of notes for the game and points you want to get across. And they, like, harp on stuff that's just wrong. So like last night, Jessica Mendoza was talking about, so I think, what was it? Did Matt Beatty pinch hit or something last night? I forget. They were just talking about how, oh, Matt Beatty was consistently batting third this year, but Dave Roberts wanted to make sure he got him, tries off the bench to prepare him for the postseason. It's like, what? So Matt Beatty has batted third six times all year, but he happened to bat third the first two games of the series against the Mets. So if your only exposure to the Dodgers, like in recent memory here, in the last couple weeks, is just seeing those first two games, you're like, oh, Matt Beatty's their third hitter. I see. So, and like, they just kept talking about this, and they brought it up like later in the game too. But the worst of all was, like, so last night, Kenley Jansen, he was one of the guys they wanted to get into the game. That's why Buehler went short. And because it was a tie game, you're not guaranteed the Mets are going to bat in the ninth at that point. So they wanted to get Kenley Jansen in the game. So he pitched the eighth, not the ninth. It's a tight game. In like normal baseball situation, very few managers put their closers into a tie game on the road. This was not the situation. This is the Dodgers like getting guys work for the – getting them prepared for the postseason. So He pitches the eighth, looked really good. That was one of the two perfect innings he had this week. And then during the inning in the top of the ninth, they pinch hit for Kenley Jansen. And they show like Kenley Jansen in the dugout, and they're like, all three of them are having a discussion. Matt Bescurgeon, Jessica Mendoza, and A-Rod, like, man, Kenley looks like he wants to go back out there again. Yeah, we'll see. Maybe if the Dodgers get the lead, he can pitch the ninth. And meanwhile, like, I think it was Edwin Rios who pinch hit for him. It's like, he's already batted. Like, Kenley's out of the game. And they kept talking about it. And then, like, the best – so this is before it went to break for the ninth inning. Meanwhile, and they showed, like, I think Kenta Maeda and Adam Kolarik were warming up, and I think Dylan Flora was warming up earlier in the inning. And they showed it, and the announcers were like, whoa, maybe they're not going into Jansen in the ninth. That's weird, you know. It's like, they just pinch hit for him. But, like, the best part was – so Sons of Steve Garvey. In fact, I want to make sure I get this exactly right. And it's just – like, so this was, I would say, this was before the top of the it's when the top of the ninth was still going. So Sons of Steve Garvey, right near the end of the inning, in all caps, Jansen was batted for, ding dongs. That was their entire tweet. I was laughing so hard. By the way, I had paused the cars at this point, so I was listening to the broadcast, and I was like shocked by what they were talking about. So then, it seemed pretty obvious. You figure during the break, someone's producer or someone go, hey, by the way, you know, they pinch you for Jansen. Like, they come back from break. In fact, let me just get this right. I'm pretty sure it was Adam Kolarik who started the inning.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then they're like, oh, they didn't go to Jansen. Kind of surprising. It's like, no, they pinch hit for him, you idiots. Like, they kept talking about it. It's like, what game are you watching? The game against the Red Sox earlier this year? Like, I don't know, man. They just harp on these points that don't matter. And it's a very bad broadcast. Like, it's not like, I don't want to, I'm not criticizing like the effort, but it's like, man, just like put in a little bit of effort to like know the teams you're calling, you know? And I get it. It's hard. You can't like know every team, but there has to be some like sort of nuance here that they're just completely missing. And so those sort of things, I normally hate it. Like, because everyone's sort of reaction to like Joe Buck or something is like, oh, Joe Buck hates my team, or I hate Joe Buck. Because that's what national announcers get. They get national. I don't like piling on like that, but they are objectively bad. It's a bad broadcast. So I wish they were better, and that's about it.
I do wonder how much fault lies on them themselves versus either the production team or the research team at ESPN. Because it seems like some of that, like, you know, the Kenley as an example, like a producer should be in their ear within two seconds. Like, he was pinch hitting for it, change your mind. And they just, right. To keep going on for that, there's some sort of dysfunction there.
Yeah, it's very odd. And, like, that's why it seems like they have these, like, fabricated, or not fabricated, that's not the right word. Just they have these, like, points they want to get to at some point in the broadcast. And they will jam those in regardless of context. It's like, let's say you're, like, a customer service, like, cold caller or something, right? You get someone on the phone and you're asking them questions, and you don't listen to the answers, but you have these questions you're trying to answer, but like then you ask like a third question, but they've already answered it like in the first two. But like, if all you have to do is like listen and pay attention, and like you would understand this, but they're like, nope, we got to get through our list. Like that's what it seems like to me. So again, it's a hard job, but I just wish they did a better job at it.
Okay. We have our friend Craig, writer for the website, sent us questions every week. I get to see him this weekend, I think. I have to reach out to him. I have a small window, but I think we're going to make something work. But right now, it's time for...
Questions from Craig.
All right, five questions. You ready?
Yeah.
The LA Dodger franchise record for runs scored in a season is 842 in 1962, and that was over 165 games due to a three-game playoff. Will the 2019 Dodgers break that record? And if so, who will score the 843rd run?
I mean, they would have to, like, be really, really bad over the last 2 weeks to not break that, so they definitely will, and Edwin Rios is going to score it somehow.
Cody Bellinger. I'm going chalk.
He's going to hit 27 home runs to get to the record.
All right, Eric, this is for you. You have been tracking this for months. Who will win the title of Dodgers sacrifice bunt leader for 2019?
Okay, so the current standings, and it's major league standings too, because like Sonny Gray. Yes,
and Craig mentioned that. I wanted to get your prediction first. But
yeah, so the leader in the clubhouse right now is Kenta Maeda, but he's pitching out of the bullpen. So unless he has a 3 or 4 inning save in his belt, he's not going to bat. And look, he still could. So I think he's out. So all it takes is one of Kershaw and Ryu to get two sacrifices to beat that. I will say I think Ryu's going to do it. I think he gets the two needed to beat them. Kershaw gets one, ends at 13. Sonny Gray doesn't sacrifice because he's selfish. No, I don't know.
Just looking at Baseball Reference War, Craig's final three pick, and there are nothing shocking here, for NL MVP are Cody Bellinger, Anthony Rendon, and Christian Yelich. What do you think of that, and would you change anything on that list?
So I think the way it was going, I think Christian Yelich, had he not hurt his kneecap, I think he would have won. Like, he's been sort of distancing himself offensively the last few weeks from everybody else in the National League. And this week sucked because, like, the reigning NL MVP, Yelich, and then, like, the clear-cut favorite for AL MVP, Mike Trout, ended their season. Mike Trout's having foot surgery, so that sucks. I still think he should win AL MVP. But for Yelich, so leaving what's going to end up being about 3 weeks on the table will help Bellinger. The problem is, like, how you factor in defense. Like, Bellinger's obviously been really good defensively at multiple positions and has an advantage over that in Yelich, over Yelich. But I would say Yelich, like, makes up a lot of that in base running advantage. I think he's it was 30 steals in maybe 32 attempts. I haven't looked at this in a couple days, but yeah. So, like, I think Yelich, like, if you had to pin me down right now, Yelich is the favorite, but there's still 2 weeks left. So, and it's going to be hard. You can't build momentum if you're not playing. So if one of these players finishes hot, Rendon is criminally underrated usually. So, like, he's had seasons before where he, like, led in Fangraphs WAR and doesn't, like, get really sniff the MVP voting. I think if he's lower than third, it's a crime. You could see a scenario where he could win it with, an insane 2 weeks, Rendon. I just don't think it's going to happen. So it's like, unless Bellinger, completely tanks the last 2 weeks, he's in a good spot to win it. But I think if Yelich had not gotten hurt, he would have won. So I think the final order is going to be Bellinger, Yelich, Rendon. The only other person I think who could sneak in is probably Freddie Freeman. Like, Ronald Acuna is going to end up probably going 40-40. Freeman's going to have more RBIs, and, like, you get then everyone gets to argue over who's more valuable to their team, and people emphasize for the team because apparently, like, if you put something in italics, that means more. So I don't know. Like, I think that's basically what you're looking at is one of those Braves is fourth and potentially could finish third if voters, like, continue to sort of underrate Anthony Rendon. But I think it's going to be Bellinger, Yelich, Rendon.
I think that, too. I definitely think Bellinger had sort of built up enough of – and this is who I think will win, not who I would vote for win. Yelich, if I had a vote, which I don't, I still might vote for Yelich. I'm not sure. But Bellinger, it's certainly close. And Bellinger built up a really large sort of narrative around that, how good his defense is this year, and that matters a lot. We still have sort of shaky defensive metrics, so there's not a clear-cut way. So a lot of the way you get that reputation for being good defensively is just that, is how much are people talking about how good you are. And a lot of players are great defensively and never get that. Luckily, this time it fits both, right? Sometimes you get that reputation when you're not actually maybe that good. Derek Jeter comes to mind for a few seasons. And in this case, it lines up well. He deservedly is getting praised for his defense, and I think that's going to matter a lot in how people actually vote, even if Yelich sort of did really separate himself offensively. I think had Yelich stayed the same, healthy, and Bellinger goes off in a little bit of tear, he would have won it in that case as well. But now the sort of weight on that is less important.
And then this is another thing where it's like which defensive metrics do you choose? And it's really hard to, like, pin down which one is good. And, like if you look at Fangraphs WAR, like, Bellinger's leading pretty handily in Baseball Reference WAR. But, like, Fangraphs WAR, Yelich is 7.7. Bellinger's 7.2. And then Rendon and Ketel Marte are 7.0. Marte has the most, like, defensive value of those four. And Rendon actually has more defensive value on Fangraphs than Bellinger does. So, like, and Rendon and Bellinger are, like, almost in lockstep offensively, especially adjusted numbers. But they're both slugging 625. Rendon has a higher average, a little bit higher on base. WRC plus is both 161. So they're pretty close too. But, like, yeah, if, like, you know, if Bellinger gets, like, six more home runs, right, and he gets to 50, even if he doesn't, like, lead the league, he has 50, right? Like, it's sort of that, not that voters are, like, going to be tricked or something, but that's also a pretty big finish. and it would help his case. So we'll see. But yeah, like, yeah, it's just going to be interesting. I think you could see a potential for like four or five different players getting first place votes, because you know people are going to be like, well, I'll look at Freddie Freeman and all those RBIs. And then, like, I don't know. And then Ronald Acuña could go 40-40, so I don't want to, like, put that past him. And, like, Josh Donaldson's been really good, too. So, like, man, that's they're just, like, they're all really good.
The 2019 Dodgers have 12 pinch-hit home runs. That's tied for the L.A. franchise lead. Who will hit the lucky 13th pinch-hit home run?
So I think in saving Justin Turner's ankle, he'll start, you know, quite a bit once he gets back in the lineup. But they'll also, like, give him rest. So he's going to come in one of the games on the road in the last week of the year. And you know what? No, he's going to do one of the home games. Like, he'll start two of the games this weekend against the Rockies. Maybe he doesn't start the game you're there. So you'll see him on Saturday come in pinch hitting in the eighth inning, and he'll hit a home run. That'll be the 13th of the year.
Nobody. It's going to stay at 12.
Whoa. All right.
With fall in October, during one of our breaks, you mentioned to me that you had one more rant in, and we haven't hit it. And so I was trying to guess which question would be on. I figured it out. With fall in October around the corner, it is time for that annual question about why pumpkin coffee, pumpkin beer, etc. My question to you both is, do you prefer pumpkin spice drinks, peppermint, or old reliable eggnog flavored drinks, or just plain old eggnog?
So peppermint all the way. Pumpkin spice is terrible. Like, pumpkin spice belongs in one thing and one thing only, and that's pumpkin pie. And like, and basically it should be eaten maybe twice a year at most. One is obviously Thanksgiving, and one is maybe Christmas, depending on what your sort of family traditions are. But other than that, just keep it out of everything, man. It's terrible. Peppermint stuff is good. Eggnog is atrocious. It's the worst possible drink. Someone I went to high school with on Facebook the other day posted a picture of it's. They said, like, it's time, and it was just their shopping cart with pumpkin spice eggnog. And I can't think of a worse thing to drink. Like, you unless they sort of made like guacamole mayonnaise a drink somehow. Like, that would be my nightmare. Somehow with sour cream mixed in. Oh God. It's just terrible. So, yeah, get it out.
I don't really like any of these things that much. So pumpkin spice is interesting in that, like, really early in sort of this craze, there were some pumpkin beers that I enjoyed but wouldn't want more than one of. But the problem with pumpkin spice is it's really similar to the spice profile of gingerbread, which I do love a lot. And I'm wondering why. I think it's just because, well, gingerbread, it tends to be in bread and cookies, and that's something that this works really well with. So I enjoy that flavor profile a lot. It does remind me of fall, but I don't want it in a latte, and I don't want it really all that much in a beer or anything else. So also, really, really good eggnog is delicious, but anything pre-made that you're getting in a store or anything eggnog flavored, I'm not interested in.
Yeah, I mean, and I will admit, like, I'm weird with eggs, where I, like, only like them scrambled. So I get that. I'm the weird one here.
I don't like eggs at all. But if you, with a proper eggnog, the alcohol basically should kill. It should just add texture and not any taste. It should instead taste like sort of fall seasonings and cream is what it should mostly taste like.
And I get, like, you basically could add alcohol to anything and make it, like, passable or something. But, like, I think I get weirded out by folks who just like eggnog on its own, like non-alcoholic eggnog. It's like, ugh, what are you doing?
I'm curious. Yeah, I'm trying to think of how that would work, just because I think the alcohol does so much in killing, so making the egg part of the texture. So I don't know. Maybe I'll find a really good recipe and make you a cup and see if I can convert you.
Will you just like go to the store and like get a carton of half and half and then just down that? Like,
sounds great.
Is that like the equivalent for the every part of the year that's not like the holidays? Like, ugh, God.
Well, we mentioned, we've got a special episode next week that we're going to record a little bit early since I am in LA. So we won't have a full recap of this week next week, but then we'll be back for the playoffs. And I don't know what our recording schedule is going to be like in the playoffs, but I imagine it'll be similar to what we've done in years before, where we try to record a little bit more frequently and a little bit shorter.
Yeah, I'm going to be at the home games for the Dodgers, like during the playoffs, and I'm not going to be, I don't think, traveling until the World Series.
Are you going to travel to Oakland for the World Series?
No. Oh, well, I...
Called shot so there.
I like that call. I think, and knock on wood here, I think I'll end up going to the World Series at least the first two games, no matter where it is.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so like in a weird way, like if somehow like the Dodgers are in the World Series, it would be best for me, like personally, if the Dodgers didn't have home field, so I could go to the first five games. So we'll see. But yeah, so that's, if you're looking at for what I'm selfishly rooting for, that's probably it. But yeah, so we'll talk about this. We'll have a sort of a playoff roster sort of preview. We hinted at, well, at least my thoughts on it, I hinted at earlier in this podcast. But yeah, we'll see you next week. And possibly by then, the Dodgers may have wrapped up the number one seed of the NL. But then again, now that I said this, they probably won't. So we'll see you next week.